He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday. It's Thursday already. It is January 8th, and this is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and this is the Best Stocks Now show, where politics, the economy, current events all collide in hopefully an entertaining fashion and also a profitable fashion with all of the different cross currents that we're seeing. We've got a split decision in the market so far today with the Dow up. The Dow is up 106 to 49,102 in its quest for 50,000. We're not that far away, just 900 points. The NASDAQ, however, is down 179 points. We're seeing some profit-taking there. There were some really huge moves here over the last couple of weeks, especially in the memory chip stocks. The NASDAQ down 176 to 23,409. The S&P, in its quest for 7,000, is down 6 to 6,914 right now. We've got bond market is quiet, 4.18%. Gold is down a quarter of a percent right now. Gold has been seeing some profit taking. Silver remains very volatile. It's down 4.75%. And Bitcoin has given up 90,000. It's at 89,652, down 2,000 on the day. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only money management firm. I've been a professional money manager for the last 26 years, so hopefully I bring something to the table here today. And it doesn't matter whether you have nothing in the market or if you've got your IRA, your Roths, your college funds, whatever the case may be, it all, in the end, affects your pocketbook. It was an overall choppy day in the market yesterday. We had a really strong start to the year 2026, which began last Friday, and we just saw an explosion to the upside in the Western Digitals, the Micron Technologies, the Lam Research, the chip stocks, which are filling those data centers with those high-speed chips. And, of course, all of the equipment makers that make those chips and on and on and on. But we had kind of a choppy market yesterday. That battle in silver, you know, a lot of times you wonder how high silver can go, Barry. A lot of times when you see this choppy action start to begin, that is definitely spelling kind of the end of just a furious up move in silver. And now you're seeing up 7% days and down 7% days. I've just seen during my years of watching the markets, when you start to see that those really big drops and then those really big gains, you're kind of seeing a top put in for now after what was the number one asset class last year was silver. Who would have ever guessed that? But it's starting off on a very, very choppy waters right now.
And it's, you know, it's when, you know, it was really a supply-demand issue because you had a lot of these contracts that needed to be, you know, needed to be settled in physical silver, and it, you know, basically created a, you know, created its own kind of run on silver to a certain extent. And so you had to have the bullion, and you had to have the bullion in a particular place when it was delivered, right? And so as those contracts, right, come due, you know, you're likely going to see a bit less, you know, demand push, right, for silver. And so, as with most commodities, when you have that supply demand mismatch, at some point, supply will increase to meet demand.
That's it, exactly.
And in the choppy space here is where you're beginning to get towards potentially some equilibrium, and that's when you have this choppy market.
And it's really been all the metals. It's been platinum. It's been zinc. It's been molybdenum. has been aluminum. It's been gold, the rare earths. It's been lithium. They've started off on a very strong note here so far in 2026. And now you're seeing a little bit of cooling off. The other thing that we're going to watch closely this year is the jobs market, because that has so much to do with the economy, and it has so much to do with the Fed and the setting of interest rates. We're hoping for a rate cut at the January meeting. I don't think we'll get one. I think it's probably less than 50-50. But should we see weakness in the jobs reports, that would help push them towards another rate cut. But the job cut announcements in December fall to the lowest level since July 2024. That's the Challenger Job Cuts Report. So we'll count that as a strong report on jobs. And have we got the initial jobless claims? I missed that.
The initial jobless claims, too. It came out a little bit earlier this morning. But, 208K.
That's low.
Trailed consensus was 213. So another, positive number there, good number there for the unless you're part of that 208,000 who was claiming. Other than that, right, you're continuing.
That's a very
claims.
Low number.
Yeah, continuing claims creeped up a little bit, 1.91 million, but still like you said, it's still a benign number, and nothing worrisome at the moment.
No,
so we got to get up to that 300 range to start.
And of course, these strong jobs reports are sending interest rates a little higher. We're up to 4.18, and of course, it doesn't matter. If you are in the market for a new car and an auto loan or a new house and a real estate loan, all of these reports that come in on a daily basis greatly impact the rate that you'll have to pay when you go to get that loan. The affordability index for homes, it has improved quite a bit. In fact, it's the best it's been in 4 years. Now, that's all on a relative basis. Homes are still expensive, and the supply is not that great, and we still have a lot of renters, and the age has gone way up of the average new home first-time home buyer. But that's something that the Trump administration, at least, is determined to try to help in that. And there was big
something.
Yeah, that proposal about not allowing these big private equity firms like BlackRock and Blackstone to go in there and buy big blocks of homes, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, over the years, really since 2008-09, right? I mean, it's kind of a phenomenon that started, I'd say, kind of early 2010s. But you had these, big companies, Blackstone being one. I think Homes for Rent is the name of one of the larger ones, but they've been, basically buying homes over time using, basically private equity money, right, and purchasing homes and then renting those out, right, to folks. And, there's been arguments on, both sides. It's good for home prices because you've got another buyer in there, but at the same time, it hurts the affordability, at least for home buyers, because it's, creates another buyer that they're going against.
Well, it's hard for the little guy to compete with a BlackRock that oversees $10 trillion in money, right? They do not purchase or own single-family rental homes. There's other ones that do that, but still taking them out of the market. And there's still a lot of confusion over it. Trump just kind of throws it out on Truth Social. But I think it's a good idea to take them out. And, of course, they stepped in. Now, there is a place for them. They stepped in after the financial crisis, and
right,
they were early and aggressive buyers of distressed U.S. homes, which kind of institutionalized the single-family rental market. But that is coming under fire, and there's some confusion, but it looks like Trump is definitely wanting to end private equity's big force at this point in time, now that the financial crisis is way back in 2008-09, to take them out of the market. You've still got the Venezuela thing that's got to be worked out. There's a lot of skepticism surrounding Venezuela's oil revival, but I would just say that I think it's going to happen. I think, you know, the first move was made by taking out the head of the stake and Venezuela with the richest reserves in the world. But I just don't see how the oil companies themselves really benefit, because it's going to drive down the prices of oil. And you're already seeing those one-day moves in Exxon, Conoco, Chevron to the upside. It's already dissipated. They're already selling off. I call those first moves the lemmings, Barry, that just follow the crowd. They see the headlines and they go in, oh boy, look at Venezuela coming back online. That's good for the oil markets. No, it puts more supply in the world, and it drives down oil prices, and it drives down their profits. They're struggling with $57 oil right now. We'll be right back.
I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Another issue you have to fight with the getting the American oil companies back in Venezuela. You know, Hugo Chavez, he took all the oil companies' assets back in 2007 and drove ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips out of Venezuela. The companies have yet to receive compensation for this seizure. And, of course, they're going to want some kind of guarantees, which I don't know if there is such a thing down in a hostile area like that, a volatile area like that, let's call it. But it does seem like we're pretty determined to make sure that China doesn't get its mitts on that oil that is closer to our hemisphere than their hemisphere. So that's all playing into this. And I still think that the winners, if you're going to play that at all, are going to be the picks and shovels that the big oil companies hire to do the drilling and to do the pipelines and to do the wellheads and all this kind of stuff. And we're still waiting for things to settle. We have no exposure to any oil and gas stocks. We didn't have any exposure last year, except for one. We had owned LNG for a while, because LNG still plays an important role in powering the data centers.
Yeah, used to power those GE Vernova gas turbines.
But, you know, LNG, so that's Cheniere Energy, which is one of the biggest. But it didn't really work out, and I just backed out of it, and we haven't gotten back in. And I keep looking. There's a few oil service stocks that stand out, maybe a handful. And I would say FTI is one of the more promising ones. It must have some exposure there because it's been breaking out. But for the most part, it's been a lousy sector to invest in. The big oil stocks have been a lousy place to invest in. The upstream, the pipeline, this is not an energy transfer, enterprise products, just not a very good, vibrant sector. And the elephant in the room is $57 per barrel oil. And if you're filling your gas tank of your SUV, you're celebrating. I mean, that's great. I mean, prices of oil, gasoline here are in the low $2. But for the oil companies, you know, that's just barely above break even for them. So it's not a good investment right now, the oil sector. The oil patch, to me, it's just kind of wasted money. You're losing out opportunity cost by having it invested in that kind of dead sector, at least for investment right now.
Well, and the Trump administration, you know, has mentioned that they, you know, they prefer $50 oil, right? And so, you know, that tells you, I mean, yeah, that's $7 more down, right, to $50 range. And as they, you know, begin to, you know, whether it's, you know, through deregulation here at home in terms of drill, baby, drill, or if it's, I don't know how to say drill in Spanish, but or it's drill baby drill in Venezuela.
Andale, right? quick. But it's just it's not a good place to be invested right now, and there's opportunity cost by being in dead sectors and in dead stocks. Now the other group that's getting some lift here today, Trump is floating a $1.5 trillion defense budget. Now, it's a dream budget, okay? If I could have everything I wanted to really bring our military back to where it needs to be, he floats a $1.5 trillion budget for 2027. So you're getting a lift to General Dynamics and Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and Northrop Grumman and whatnot. And I'm a guy that looks at, hundreds and hundreds of stock charts. I spend a couple hours a day doing that. That gives me way more of a feel for the market than by listening to CNBC or listening to the Fox Business Channel or listening to Bloomberg, etc. I just look at those charts. They don't lie. And when I see flat chart after flat chart in the oil sector, I go, I just don't want to have any investments there. And the defense sector, however, I was going to say the only one that I've really liked here recently and have been tempted to get into is Raytheon. It's the best of the best right now in the world that we live in. When you saw all of those incoming missiles, guided missiles into Israel, and them all being shot down, but a few, that's Raytheon. And Raytheon is going to build that same system in a lot of other places around the world, including possibly the United States. But I see Trump going after Raytheon.
Yeah, that's
today.
The one he mentioned. Yes, yeah. That's where, he wants them, and it makes sense. He wants them to increase capacity in terms of, increasing, their ability to produce, right?
Yes.
These missiles, produce them faster, produce more of them. Well, of course, that requires investment. And he mentioned, I think, with Raytheon, essentially quit paying dividends, buying back so much stock, right? And reinvest that money, right, into their own business. So
now we have owned some of the defense stocks, but we've leaned more towards the drones, like AeroVironment,
GE Aerospace would be not really defense, but and then of course AV. What is it? AVAV? Is it still that's the drone?
AV. The AV,
right.
I would say that they represent the high tech end of the defense. Not that a Lockheed Martin, fighter jet isn't high tech, but Lockheed's been a lousy stock over the years. General Dynamics has been a lousy stock. Northrop Grumman's been a lousy stock. Well, in some extent, Boeing is not a bad. I would say that if you want to play the defense sector, Boeing. The drones, AVAV, and Raytheon, they seem to be the best positioned for all of that. Okay, and the other story is this rare earth push. And, of course, nuclear. We'll get to nuclear in a minute. I talked to several of the young men and even a couple of young women that are in the nuclear program here in Charleston. Those kids are smart, man. They know what's going on in the nuclear industry. So I have a good resource there, boots on the ground. One kid is headed up to Groton, Connecticut today. He's being assigned to a submarine. He doesn't know how long they stay under the water, but I know it could be months at a time, And he's going to get his assignment. And I told him, my father went to Groton, Connecticut as an 18-year-old back in the 1940s to go to submarine school. And fight the Japanese that had just, done what they did in Pearl Harbor. And that kid's going to that same. I'm going to go up there and visit. I've made a commitment to myself to go to Groton, Connecticut. And visit where they send those sailors and put them into submarine school. Of course, I grew up around a lot of submarines down in San Diego at Ballast Point. Now, when we come back, Rare Earth making a big splash. And there's a picks and shovel stock that you might not think of that I think is probably one of the best plays They're also making autonomous equipment for getting rare earth out of the ground. We'll be right back.
Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Now, when I wrote my book, Barry, you weren't with me when I wrote it back in 2011. The Best Stocks Now 2011. The List Will Shock You by Bill Gunderson. I kind of did a little quip on the front. You know how they say, as seen on TV? I put, as not seen on TV. Because I'm a guy, a little bit of a rebel, rebellious spirit,
maverick.
I guess, in me. You're not going to find the great stocks by listening to Cramer and to CNBC and Bloomberg and all these. That's just been my opinion. I find them by looking at their track record, their valuation, and their charts, okay? And that takes a lot of grunt work. That takes a lot of manual labor underneath the surfaces. And that's where I find, and you know, sometimes great stocks are right there in front of your nose. Now, when I wrote the book, one of the 40 stocks that I included back in 2011 was Caterpillar. At that time, Barry, it was headquartered in Peoria, Illinois. Not anymore. Guess where Caterpillar is headquartered today? I'll give you a guess. What state do you think that Caterpillar moved to their headquarters? And I'll give you a hint. Elon Musk did the same thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got to be Texas.
Yeah, Texas is where they're headquartered now. No longer Peoria, Illinois. Illinois is kind of known for being a high tax and not a real friendly state towards big business. But Caterpillar, when I wrote the book, was a market cap of $65 billion. Now it's $280 billion. It's more than a four-bagger since then. When I wrote the book, Caterpillar was $105.86. If you bought the book and you bought Caterpillar, it's a $600 stock today. Almost a five-bagger now from that original. And I invited the CEO at the time, Douglas Oberhelman, on the show. And he was very gracious. He said that, you know, he didn't have time for my show. But he wrote me a very nice letter that I have in my archive somewhere, signed by Douglas Oberhelman. He's no longer the CEO. But I've always called Caterpillar the big cat. There was another stock at that time that was also a very good stock called Bucyrus, and it was actually bought out by Caterpillar not that long after that. So Caterpillar was a Gunderson Best Stock Now back in 2011. It had a Gunderson grade of A, and it's a five-bagger since then. Well, where is it today? Caterpillar has been a powerful performer. And the reason why I'm bringing up Caterpillar today is they're big time. You talk about Tesla and now Ford coming out in 2027, hopefully, with fully autonomous, you know, hands off, eyes off, everything, drive itself. Caterpillar is really a huge leader in this hands off. You know, Deere's doing it too with the agricultural equipment, but imagine in a pit mine all the danger of being a driver in one of those big, those things are beast. And there's news today on the big cat that they are pushing their autonomous technology into new territory, expanding beyond large scale mining operations and into quarry applications. Now you're getting down to lithium and rare earth as they look to translate decades of autonomy investment into broader commercial use. And there's a picture on Seeking Alpha today of a Cat 777 truck working autonomously in the company's first quarry application at the Luckstone Bull Run plant, which is in Virginia. Well, when I make my trip up to Connecticut to see the sub-base, Barry, I'll stop by Bull Run. I'm sure that's got something to do with the Civil War up in that neck of the woods.
Certainly.
I'll stop by and get a picture of one of these 777 big cats with no driver. They've already hauled more than 1 million tons of material, with productivity reaching parity with traditionally staffed machines. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding, okay? Here's Caterpillar's results over the years as far as a stock goes. It's one of those rare stocks that's been around a long time. I want to say Caterpillar was founded in 1925.
Wow.
From a merger of Holt Manufacturing and CL Best Tractor Company. This was all in my book. I just wrote a quick little description of each of these stocks in the book and why I like them, where you had that convergence of valuation and performance.
Yeah, mining's come a long way, I guess, since Fred Flintstone was on top of that dinosaur, right?
Yeah,
now here we are. The rock quarry, right?
Yeah, 15 years later, let's look back at Caterpillar. Over the last 10 years, the stock has delivered to investors 28% per year. It is the best industrial out there. The S&P has delivered 24.8. Of course, the S&P is way above its normal average of 11-12% over the last 10 years because of this boom in earnings that we've seen. And Caterpillar has done even better than the S&P 500. Over the last 5 years, the big cat, 28% per year total return. It does pay a dividend versus the S&P, which is 17. And over the last 12 months, get this, with this boom in lithium, rare earth, etc., Caterpillar's up 66%, while the S&P's up 16%. Now, currently it has a bit of a valuation problem. It doesn't meet my valuation criteria. It has 65% upside over the next 5 years. When I do a five-year target, I like 80% or more. And I keep waiting for a pullback in Caterpillar to get back into it, and it just hasn't happened. I mean, it just keeps climbing. And it is the ultimate picks and shovels stock. On the one hand, you've got companies taking big risk, you know, to find rare earth. And by the way, the search is on for rare earth all over the world right now. And it's showing up in the weirdest places. Maybe check your backyard, see if you see any rare earth. Anything that looks like
Greenland, as you mentioned yesterday, on the coast of Greenland.
The coast of Greenland and the mound in Texas. And who knows, of course, the mountain pass of on the California-Nevada border.
Old coal mining shafts, I think you mentioned, where they were finding some in the old coal mines that were already built.
It seems to be mixed in with lithium to some extent. We're finding they need to set up a 1-800 hotline where you might think there's rare earth. Have you seen any rare earth here recently? We're especially in the market for rhodium. Rhodium's the most expensive
rare
rare earths. But anyways, I just think the way to play the rare earths, there's a few. You know, I own a little bit of critical metals, which is the Greenland play, along with five other pink sheet stocks that I'm going to put into the app. And, of course, Mountain Pass is the other rare earth stock that we own. Apple also owns a big stake in it, as does the U.S. government. But Caterpillar's kind of the ultimate. They're kind of like that Levi's were and picks and shovels and the pans were to the gold miners in 49. Caterpillar's the ultimate play in my book on all of this. So anyways, news on the big cat and their autonomous efforts now coming to fruition with the fully autonomous mine in Virginia. Okay, Lilly had a huge day yesterday. Let me just tell you this. When you've got cash flow like Lilly has, okay, other drug companies can only dream of that. Abbott, AbbVie, Pfizer, Merck, etc. They have cash flow to some extent, but not like Lilly has. That just opens up their opportunity to buy companies. Lilly is going to work with Indipro on developing oncology therapies in up to a $1 billion deal. And we're seeing this almost on a daily basis. NVIDIA, with their cash flow, how many companies has NVIDIA bought? Promising, you're almost getting into venture capital by buying NVIDIA, right? Because you're getting exposure to OpenAI and all these other
They're trading chips for equity, you know what I mean?
100%. And Lilly is in the most powerful position in the entire drug industry to expand their portfolio, to expand their pipeline by buying young, promising biotech companies. And they're not a one-trick pony. They're not just GLP-1, which, by the way, is cutting into pizza sales around the country. I read an article on how the pizza companies are crying. People are ordering small pizzas now instead of large pizzas because of the GLP-1 drugs, and they're not calling as often. But Lilly, I believe, is the best drug stock in the market today. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. And by the way, you know, when I wrote the book back in 2011, I narrowed it down to 40 stocks. And I have just decided, as I'm sitting here, Barry, it's time for an updated book. The book is now 15 years old. The same principles. The same principles are still in place today that I taught then.
You get a new 2026 resolution.
Absolutely, because the whole world has changed. Now it's all AI. Now the question is, Bill, did you mention any drug stocks in your book? Yes, two. Alexion Pharmaceutical was $8 billion at the time in Cheshire, Connecticut. I found it using my Best Stocks Now app. It had an A-plus overall grade at that time. It was bought out by AstraZeneca for $40 billion. That's a five-bagger, okay? Now, wait a minute. How about a little company by the name of Novo Nordisk out of Denmark, which at the time was a $69 billion company. At the time, they were the world's leading producer of insulin. And guess what? They found out that those drugs that they were making at the time and continued to be the number one, they were the diabetes company. And I wrote a lot of things here in my book. I said, I remember when my mother used to make me eat my broccoli every night. You know, now it seems like kids are eating cheeseburgers and french fries. And I said, I see diabetes continuing to be a growth industry going forward as America's waistline continues to expand. That was almost prophetic, Barry.
Yeah.
America's waistline continued to expand, and those diabetes drugs were found to be very effective in weight loss. And Novo Nordisk today, which I wrote about in 2011, was a $70 billion company. It's been as high as, I think, $350 billion with their Ozempic. I guess Ozempic became Wegovy, and now there's a pill, a daily pill coming from Novo Nordisk, or is it a weekly pill? I'm not sure the frequency
of
the pill is.
Yeah, how often you take it? Yeah, no, actually, that's a good question. I wonder if it's my guess is going to be daily. But
now, I'm just going to give you a boots-on-the-ground report, Barry. Last night, I use the Zepbound. Okay, once a week, I give myself a shot in the stomach. I've lost 40 pounds. Never felt better. I go to Melvin's Barbecue. I was just really in the mood for a pulled pork sandwich and a couple onion rings and some baked beans. You know, I was just really craving it, okay? And Melvin's is pretty good. It's, you know, he spun off from Bessinger's, which has been here, an old-time family of barbecue.
Those onion rings are good, too.
Yeah. And the Carolinas are known for barbecue, and, you know, in Texas it's brisket, and in the Carolinas it's pulled pork, and in a lot of cases, and Melvin's is no exception, they prefer the mustard sauce, which
right.
is a golden, sweet mustard
golden
tinge.
Barbecue, yeah.
Oh, gosh, it's good. Okay, so I get my plate, you know. There's two giant onion rings. Melvin's makes onion rings like donuts. Have you noticed that?
Oh, it's like the batter is like it's like the
donut.
It's almost like a funnel. It's almost like a funnel cake batter. Yeah,
yeah,
it's really
a donut,
is.
And somewhere in there is an onion. Okay,
right.
and they've got five different barbecue sauces, and of course the baked beans. And I got the French. I've got three side dishes: baked beans, French fries, and you know what? I was about 1/4 into that plate.
I was about
and
to say, you
I
got
was
a lot of it in your fridge.
Stuffed. Absolutely stuffed, okay? So I'm just telling you, that's how the GLP-1s, they don't take away your appetite and your enjoyment of food, but there's a trigger that sends to your brain about 1/4 into it, dude, you're full, man. You can't eat. I couldn't eat another bite. And so, yeah, I got the to-go box. The cats will have some good pulled pork today, and I'll have leftovers for a couple of days. But that's how these GLP-1s work. You get satisfied very, very quickly. Whereas, you know, I think before I didn't have that trigger that says, Bill, you've eaten enough. You're going to get sick if you eat any more. I just would gorge it in because it was so good. I mean, this donut dipped in barbecue sauce and everything. So there's
well,
a little bit of...
You've been trained to clean your plate over the years, too,
yes,
by the way.
Yes,
so that's
my mother, especially the broccoli. But anyways, that's how they work. And there were two... There's three major winners in that book. It's time to write another one. And, you know, I've offered out 4 free weeks of... the newsletter and the live trading. Well, guess what? My next quest now is to get a 2026 book out there, updated with the best stocks in the market now. We probably want to write about maybe 25, 30, maybe 40. That's what I did the first time. And anybody who calls into the show will get a free book. That's going to be the plan. So I will keep you, I get ideas, they come into my head, and I act on them. That's what I do. And it wouldn't be that hard. When I look how simple, I remember how simple this really was to write. I had a format for each stock. There's Express Scripts in there. There's the Ensign Group. There's Dollar Tree. These were all great stocks. Cummins Engines, a lot of oil stocks back then, which have been since bought out. AutoZone, one of the great stocks of all time. There's Netflix in the book. Time to update the book. Okay, we're out of time. I can't offer out a free book yet. That's in the pipeline. It's begun today. The quest has begun today. But I can offer out the newsletter. If I just compiled those newsletters every week, I'd have thousands of pages of research and lessons and whatnot. But I like making things very simple, very clean, very simple. You get 4 weeks trial to stay on top of what's going on in the market today. As you will not see on TV is my motto. And you get access to the Revolutionary app, which points you in the right direction, at least. That's a good start to narrow the field down. And then you get the actual live trading alerts for 4 weeks. When I made a lot of buys yesterday. I don't know if you noticed, Barry, but mostly existing stocks.
Yeah, you've been adding. I've noticed you've been adding to some names.
To the new clients coming in. I got to. Yesterday was a good day, and I did. So, anyways, or if you'd like to have us manage your money, that's my main gig, really. For the next 6 hours, I've got my game face on, and the team is ready to go. Managing the portfolios give us a call, set up an appointment, 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.